And welcome to Truth Quest with Melody on KATN LP 106.9 Salida. And I've got another great program lined up this evening. And my guest this evening and co-host, as often he is Dr. Eric Carlstrom. And he has been a professor of geography at California State University Stanislaus with nearly 30 years of teaching experience. And his academic research has focused on the using ancient soils, paleosols, and landforms as a means of reconstructing climates and environmental conditions of the past. And he has a website at www.naturalclimatechange.us. And you also have one at under Water Watch Alliance. And what is the other one, Eric? Somehow it got...
Melody, it's hard for me to hear you.
Okay.
Can you turn yourself up?
How's that?
That's better.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah, I've got another website. I've got two more websites. One is 911nwo.com, and the other is just my name, ericcarlstrom.com, and that one has to do with my music.
And that was a piece that we were playing just prior to introducing Dr. Carlstrom, and it's called Flying South. And it's off of his Guitar Reflections, Volume 2. And I'm going to let you let me first say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHIN staff, volunteers, and board of directors. And I also have the programs archived at www.givemesometruth.info. Right now we're doing a little web work, but hopefully we'll get everything switched over shortly and then have the site ready for the audience to go ahead and go in and review any of the past programs. And some of the programs are linked from your websites as well, right?
Yeah, many of the shows that we've done together with people talking about these issues, you and I have co-hosted with Dr. Tim Ball of Canada and Rosalind Peterson and Jerry Smith and many individuals on these topics. And I think between all these interviews, it helps to have this information archived on your website and mine as information sources for people who really want to, you know, get some alternative perspectives on these issues.
And I do want to also state we are also still doing our on-air membership drive, and we're trying to get some more members here and or renewing members, because our goal is $5,000, and we're trying to work our way towards that. And so I want to state that you're tuned into your one and only free-range community radio station, KHIN, and our membership drive being underway. It's an overdrive is what we're saying, and if you want to continue hearing the unique kind of programming that only KHIN can deliver, we need your help. And by becoming a new KHIN member or by renewing your existing membership, you help us keep Salida's only commercial-free radio station alive. It's so easy. Just give us a call at 539-1069 or drop by the radio station or mail us a contribution to Box 596, Salida, Colorado, 81201. And that's during in the daytime, because unfortunately at night there's only one person here. And so, and since we're on the phone, it's kind of hard to take phone calls and for your membership. But in the daytime, we have people here so that you can do so. And we broadcast from the alley behind the Mountain Mail. Or you can go online at khen.org to sign up. We have membership levels to suit every wallet and nice tokens of appreciation, too, as a way to thank you for supporting this vital resource. So, Dr. Carlstrom, I think we wanted to kind of take off where we left off a few weeks ago, because you'd had some work that you had published and wanted to continue to finish getting into the extensiveness of this subject. And so I'll just kind of let you go take it from there.
Yeah, okay, Melody. Again, if you could turn yourself up, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Okay, let's see if there's something.
You've gone back down to the same level you were.
Let's see, tribe. How does that work? Does that help?
It's about the same, Melody.
Okay, so that... has any of that help? No?
No, I guess you're just going to have to speak loudly to me.
Okay, all right.
Okay, well, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to come back and speak about this topic of geoengineering. We talked about this once before, as I mentioned, and of course we talked about the man-caused global warming fraud many times. In particular, what I'd like to discuss tonight is the material that I put together for a Commonwealth Club panel discussion in San Francisco that Rosalind Peterson invited me to participate in last March. And Commonwealth Club is a fairly prestigious kind of a public forum for social issues. I mean, Mikhail Gorbachev and, you know, Clinton and all kinds of bigwigs have appeared there. Michael Crichton was there and gave his excellent speech about environmentalism as religion. And so it's just kind of a cutting-edge social forum. For that panel discussion, I put together a large PowerPoint, which is on my www.naturalclimatechange.us website. Under geoengineering, it's called Man-Made Climate Change in the Skies, or Playing God with the Atmosphere and Earth. And that is what... that was the title of my presentation. That's on my website, and that's what I'd like to talk about tonight. And the reason I'd like to keep going on this is because I perceive, and having taught for 30 years at universities, and just the people I know, people are very much in the dark about geoengineering and what it is, how long it's been used by various governments, what the implications are for our future in terms of many aspects of our life. So I'd like to start off by quoting Martin Rees, of the president of the Royal Society in Britain, in April 2010. Okay, this is a guy, this is one of the premier scientific organizations in the world. Of course, a lot of the global warming propaganda is coming out of England, and the Royal Society is right in line with the BBC and the British government, the BBC being the propaganda arm of the British government. Here's what he says on the topic of geoengineering the climate. It says the continuing rise in the atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases, mainly caused by the burning of fossil fuels, is driving changes in the Earth's climate. The long-term consequences will be exceedingly threatening, especially if nations continue, quote, business as usual, end quote, in the coming decades. Most nations now recognize the need to shift to a low-carbon economy, and nothing should divert us from the main priority of reducing global greenhouse gas emissions. But if such reductions achieve too little, too late, there will surely be pressure to consider a Plan B, to seek ways to counteract the climatic effects of greenhouse gas emissions by geoengineering. Well, okay, so in fact, if we look at many definitions of geoengineering, particularly by the Royal Society, here's a definition of by the Royal Society in 2009 in a document called Geoengineering the Climate, Science, Governance, and Uncertainty. The official definition of geoengineering for the Royal Society is, quote, deliberate large-scale manipulation of the planetary environment to counteract anthropogenic climate change. So right there in that short little definition, they give the impression that humans are wrecking the climate by, you know, burning fossil fuels, and that geoengineering is an attempt to fix that. Well, I would say, unfortunately, I'm sorry to tell you, that these are lies. These are preposterous lies. It's a kind of a Joseph Goebbels Hitler kind of lie, the kind where if you make a big lie and then repeat it often, the people will believe it. Here's what President Lyndon Baines Johnson said. Now, President Johnson, of course, back in the 60s. Control of space means control of the world. From space, the masters of infinity would have the power to control the Earth's weather, to cause drought and flood, to change the tides and raise the levels of the sea, to divert the Gulf Stream and change temperature climates to frigid. Okay, well, this is what it's about. All this other stuff is, I'm afraid, a smokescreen. And what we see so often is that, you know, people say, oh, the trees are dying. You know, it must be global warming. It must be my fault for driving a car and for burning fossil fuels. That's unfortunately quite wrong, because if you add more CO2 to the atmosphere, plants actually do better. If you were to warm up the climate a little bit, and we've actually seen cooling since 1998, so even that's a lie, that's also good for plants. So other things are stressing out these plants, and of course that is the geoengineering. So what is going on in the sky? What does geoengineering mean? Well, it includes weather modification, which has been going on since the 1940s. Many of these are for-profit corporations and individuals. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, lists 69 projects this year, mostly to make it rain or snow. And, of course, ski areas and farmers want to modify the weather.
Okay, can I also mention that when you say anthropogenic, that is meaning that's man-caused when you say that term?
Yeah, anthro is humans, and genesis is the origin of something. So anthropogenic means it's just another way of saying man-caused global warming. Also, in addition to weather modification, again, which has been going on for 60 years, started in the 40s, with making it rain, with, you know, adding silver iodide to the sky, to the clouds, and seeding the clouds and causing clouds to get enlarged and then make it rain, sometimes pour and flood. Also, steering hurricanes was experimented on back in the 50s and 60s with some success. This is not new stuff. Now, also, there have been ongoing scientific experiments with the atmosphere and with space. There's a great book by the nun, Rosalie Bertell, who has two PhDs, called Planet Earth, the Latest Weapon of War. And she talks about how in the late 50s and early 60s, the government was exploding nuclear devices, fission and fusion bombs into the upper atmosphere, and they, you know, changed the eradicated parts of the Van Allen belts and formed new ones, so humans have been experimenting for a long time with the atmosphere, governments in particular, often on the civilian population without ever informing the civilian population of the experiments. One example of this kind of weather modification would be, I think it was 1952 in Britain, in the town of Devon in the West Coast. There was Operation Cumulus. It was by the Royal Air Force, seeding clouds, and the people were not told. And huge floods occurred, and I don't know what, 39 people were killed, and lots of property damage was done. Enormous floods occurred. And so there's lots and lots of examples of these kinds of kind of covert operations with militaries using weather warfare experiments and conducting them against their own population. So then that's the next kind, ongoing military operations, weather environmental warfare, most projects are classified and denied. Now, under the Star Wars government funding blitz in the 1980s and the Strategic Defense Initiative of the 90s and the present decade, or the last decade, there was an awful lot of funding off the books, black budget type of operations, black operations, were done not only for testing extremely low frequency, radiation, electromagnetic radiation like ELFs and radio waves and things like that, but also according to Alex Constantine and Jerry Smith and others who studied HARP, which is this facility that puts, you know, billions of watts of energy directing it up into the upper atmosphere, to the ionosphere, and then sending it anywhere on the planet because it will bounce off the ionosphere. That a lot of this research is directed towards mind control, even back in the Star Wars days of the 80s. Now, this is something that, again, the government's not going to tell you. You're not going to get it on the mainstream media. You're not going to get it anywhere unless you read or listen to radio shows like this. So, interestingly enough, there are about 150 international treaties that prohibit weather warfare and environmental warfare, and yet it has a long and distinguished history. And then, finally, geoengineering would include all of the other above efforts, including what they call terraforming or the Earth's atmosphere and environment, changing it in many ways, officially now to mitigate anthropogenic global warming. But again, I insist, based on my own research and my own knowledge, that this is a cover story. In fact, humans have not changed the climate, again, by burning fossil fuels, but we are changing local environments and climates, again, with geoengineering. So in a sense, it's a perfect cover for the masses. Now, for those who are, just to remind people, if they don't believe me, which, you know, I understand, because, you know, the last 20, 40 years have been a propaganda assault on the people of the world to the idea of global warming. This has all been by design, coming out of propaganda institutions like the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. But on my website, I've got an 80-page letter to policymakers and citizens called Disproofs of the Hypothesis of Anthropogenic Global Warming, AGW, and Proofs that It is a Fraud. So, again, these are two issues that are integrally related. And a lot of people like Rosalind Peterson will not attack the anthropogenic global warming fraud because it is so entrenched in people's minds. But I attack it, and I will continue to attack it for the rest of my days, because I actually know something about past climate, and I know that this is a lie. And now here's a good statement by... Yeah, Melody, you're going to have to speak up.
Okay, I was going to mention, too, that Colorado does have a Department of Weather Modification. So if you know, they have to be dealing with weather, and so that means that would be man-caused. So if it's natural and it's in beside negatory effects to the climate, then, you know, this kind of flies in the face of all that, as I see it.
Well, yeah, this, I think, just helps the confusion. But I was going to read a quote by Paul Johnson, and I think it's quite telling. He says, "The idea that human beings have changed and are changing the basic climate system of the Earth through their industrial activities and burning of fossil fuels, the essence of the Greens' theory of global warming, has about as much basis in science as Marxism," of course, communism, "and Freudianism, psychology. Global warming, like Marxism, is a political theory of actions demanding compliance with its rules. Marxism, Freudianism, global warming, these are proof, of which history offers so many examples, that people can be suckers on a grand scale. To their fanatical followers, they are a substitute for a religion. Global warming, in particular, is a creed, a faith, a dogma that has little to do with science. If people are in need of religion, why don't they just turn to the genuine article?" I like that quote. Ed Ring says, "This man-caused global warming fraud will be remembered as the greatest mass delusion in the history of the world, that carbon dioxide, the life of plants, was considered for a time to be a deadly poison." Tim Ball, who we've interviewed now 9 times, recently came out with a book called Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory, and he refers to this man-caused global warming as, quote, a massive deception. And Professor Robert M. Carter, who wrote an equally excellent book called Climate, the Counter-Consensus, says anthropogenic global warming is, quote, the greatest self-organized scientific and political conspiracy that the world has ever seen. He says future generations will regard this as a period of, quote, collective insanity. So we're here to try to, you know, correct that with some facts. Now, again, I don't want to spend too much more time with this anthropogenic global warming except to say it is a fraud and it is a great cover story for geoengineering. Now let's talk about geoengineering, which really is happening. It's been going on for a long time. It's related to the chemtrails. It's related to HAARP. It's related to many, many military activities, and almost all of them are officially denied. So you call your senator and you say, you know, please stop the military jets from spraying particulates into the atmosphere because they're causing artificial clouds, which is blocking the sunlight. And they'll say, oh, you know, we're not doing that. Those are normal jet contrails. Well, that, unfortunately, is a lie. And that's, of course, more and more people are seeing that and saying that. And there's a number of good movies about it and a number of good books and et cetera. Again, there's official denial about this. Now, let me just mention a couple of the ongoing projects. Project Cloverleaf. Well, actually, the spraying in Northern California started in earnest about 1988. So it's taken a lot of people a long time to start looking at the sky. But now what we have is a sky that is not natural. It's, to a large extent, it's man-made. We have artificial clouds. I'm 62, and I, you know, went hiking and climbing and skiing and whatnot back in the 70s and 80s before this started, and took a lot of pictures of the sky because I was teaching, you know, Introduction to Physical Geography and Climatology and things like that. I was very interested in clouds. And boy, it was a different situation. You know, the official cloud classification system, which has been around for a long time, is still valid. But now we have many, many new kinds of clouds, which are again man-made or anthropogenic. And kids 20 or so wouldn't know the difference between these artificial clouds and natural clouds because they've grown up with them. But the lines in the sky that spread out, what Rosalind Peterson calls persistent contrails, what most people call chemtrails, these are new phenomena. Project Cloverleaf is also known as the SHIELD Project, started in 1994. It's been going on since then to the present. It is a global, covert, probably military project coordinated to block and scatter sunlight. So the official term is solar radiation management. And again, the official justification is, oh, well, we have warmed the climate. Now we've got to cool the climate. So we're going to reduce the amount of sunlight coming in. Well, of course, this is what happens when you spray millions of tons of aluminum oxides, barium oxides, strontium oxides, titanium oxides, sulfur oxides, tiny particulates, less than, some cases, less than a micron, which is a millionth of a meter in diameter. Sometimes it's a vapor. They throw out aluminum vapor. Well, of course, all this stuff comes down. You know, it comes down into the water, comes down into the soils, comes down to the plants. The reason they're putting these particulates in the upper troposphere, now the middle troposphere as well as the stratosphere, has to do with this, a number of experiments, a number of reasons which we can talk about. This Project Cloverleaf has involved military and commercial jets spraying particulates into the atmosphere, causing a reduction in the amount of solar radiation or global dimming. What has happened is, again, the atmosphere has been somewhat militarized now. So the troposphere, which prior to this time did not conduct electricity, very poor conductor of electricity, now is starting to behave more like an electrified plasma because they've added these very, very tiny particulates, these metallic salts that conduct electricity. So now, in conjunction with the directed energy which can be added to the atmosphere, and this, of course, is completely invisible, like extremely low frequencies and radio waves and things like that, coming from HAARP and GWEN. HAARP, of course, is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program in Alaska. And then there's something like another 18 or 20 thought to be similar ionospheric heaters throughout the world. So it's not just the United States doing this. This is the global. This is a global coordinated program. It's going on in almost every country. There's about four or five countries that I know of that are not being sprayed like this, and they include Venezuela, Colombia, Iran, and North Korea. So for whatever reason, the political situation there will not tolerate this international effort. Okay, it's an international coordinated effort.
I just mentioned there's, you know, one of the things, I had taken a walk with a relative not too long ago, and when I pointed to the sky, they didn't see what I was trying to point out. And so discussing what we're looking at and how they come about, because often you will see these spraying these aerosols, whatever, from these planes, comes in ahead of a front. And when they do this, then you will start, they will literally cover the whole sky often within an hour maybe, and then it will spread out, and then you see a haze. Now, sometimes it's as though it's blocking a front or attracting a front, and I'm not quite sure on all of that. All I know is that when you often hear them announce that there's a front coming in, and then you see them starting this in the morning, and this is done usually around noon when the clouds are, the haze is either gotten worse or dissipated, correct?
Yeah, that's true. And again, now, you know, we have, of course, satellites and ways to track weather fronts, and our abilities to predict weather are better than ever before, although they're still imperfect. But when a front is coming, of course, we our weather experts in the military know it, and what they often tend to do is lay down these, I'll call them chemtrails. Rosalind Peterson wants to call them persistent contrails, because that's what NASA calls them. But, you see them in grid patterns. You see them spreading out into a big haze. They actually form artificial cirrus clouds, which are the high hazy clouds in the upper troposphere, which block sunlight. And so you can start out with a perfectly clear day, and then you see maybe 10, then maybe 20, then maybe 30. Sometimes I've seen as much as 100 of these lines in the sky, which will spread out, and sometimes shift with the winds, and often then merge. They just get very, very thick, and so these individual chemtrails can last for 20, 24 hours. So they're certainly not the same as the old jet contrail, which was made of water vapor by jets after World War II and until this program started, and the water vapor would freeze into ice crystals and then dissipate, you know.
Often
be gone within 15 minutes, a minute. But let me finish answering. So what I think is happening, and we'll talk to Scott Stevens next week, and he's a disgusted retired meteorologist who believes that all weather now is scalar and controlled. But he will have, I think, some very good insights on this. But basically, what I think is happening when they do this spraying prior to when a front comes in, they are creating very, very, very tiny water droplets, which are so tiny. See, when you put condensation nuclei, which tiny little particles in the atmosphere, these become the nucleus around which water vapor will condense into a water droplet or an ice crystal. Ice crystal if it's below 32 degrees, water droplet if it's above 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And if the condensation nuclei, if the water droplet forms very, very small, it's too small to drop. It's too small to result in precipitation. So by doing these all these trails prior to the coming in of the front, I think in general, and this would just, you know, be kind of a general rule of thumb, I think what they're doing is reducing the amount of precipitation you're going to be getting from that storm front. So it's very easy now for our weather controllers to create drought. And I think that this is what's happened here for the last decade or so in the San Luis Valley, where we've had terrible drought and a lot of farmers are going out of business. And who's doing it? Well, it could be the people who are trying to get the precipitation up at the ski areas to the north of us, or I think it's probably them and the military and whoever else is in control of this Project Cloverleaf, because it seems to be above any one government. If it's occurring in all but four or five nations, that is 186 countries are coordinated in this now for the last 17 years. Now the fact that the American people and the people of the world are not noticing this is to me astounding. But I have to recall that I didn't notice it either until about 2005, and here I was teaching, physical geography, environmental science, human ecology. I think people get, into their patterns, and if there are slow, imperceptible changes, they don't notice it. So anyway, I hope we're waking up. Did you have something that you wanted to come back with, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to state I've people down in the San Luis Valley that I can recall was back in the 90s that they were speaking about this particular subject, and I, didn't think much about it or understand what they were talking about until I had someone else back in the early, close to 2003 or 4 that I had been talking about it, because she was observing it quite a bit down in New Mexico. And I think that what it appears to me is that there's multiple possibilities of programs going on, because there's, and often I'm looking at other subjects and things in my research, I'm finding that that's often the case. So there's plausible deniability there. There's multiple ways to fund a program. Or say, like, if you were sending something off in space, well, you might sell the program to numerous different projects, so that you had different funds, supporting whatever they were their flight. So I find that there could be anywhere from, it seems to fill the watersheds, so it's building the watersheds. At the same time, there may be drought for the people in the valley, but if the watersheds are full and it was about water, or is it about we've got a lot of farmers and cattlemen going out of business, the water's being sold off, there's all kinds of little intricate web of things taking place that is taking down the economy and what has supported this country. And there's many different ways to do it, and one of them is through geoengineering. And when you were talking about scalar, you can view it in the clouds. You may not see what is creating that, but you get to where you recognize when there's a scalar event taking place, because the clouds reflect it, right?
Yeah, well, scalar technology goes back to Nikola Tesla, the genius from Serbia, who I think died in 1942 or was killed by the government, depending on the story you believe. But yeah, he invented the radio. He invented alternating current. He's the guy who said he invented a death ray, that he could interfere two different wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. He said he could, if he had the right wavelengths, he could split the Earth in two. So the Tesla technology has resulted in weapons which experts say are more powerful and more destructive than nuclear weapons, including, you know, the hydrogen bomb, and which is saying a lot. Well, the Soviets seem to really surge ahead, Soviet Union, when it was still the Soviet Union, back in the 60s and 70s, and there's a Colonel Thomas Bearden who has written a lot about how the Soviets were actually controlling the weather over the United States during the 70s with their woodpecker signal, which was like what we put out now with HAARP. And then a lot of people would say that, you know, by building HAARP, the Air Force and the Navy have been catching up with the Soviets. But there's a number of countries now that have this technology, this scalar technology, which many people would say is a different physics, which allows. Now remember, they're spraying and they're zapping. That's a simple way to do it. They're spraying particles in the atmosphere. There seem to be different general groupings of the particles, but certainly some of them are the metallic salts, which conduct the electricity and make the atmosphere more like a electrified plasma. So you can send electricity through it, and you can heat up certain areas, and therefore you can move weather systems around. You can create floods and drought and things like that. But yeah, scalar technology has to do with Tesla technology. That is what they're using with the HAARP facility and the Gwen towers and the ionospheric heaters. They all refer back to patents by a guy named Bernard Eastland, who acknowledges in his patents that he's, you know, drawing on the work of Nikola Tesla. Let me just go back to this idea of drought a little bit and, you know, talk about the history of this. There's an article that is quite good still and pertinent by Marjorie Tietjen, written in March 12, 2002, where she says, "Are chemtrails causing drought?" And she talks about what's been going on in the Pacific Northwest at that time. And then there's an article that came out in 2000 by Mike Blair. It's, again, 2000, that's 11 years ago. "Chemtrails said part of top secret military maneuvers over America." Now, what's interesting here is that Mike Blair was writing about this 11 years ago, and he said, "The strange vapor-like trails or chemtrails from jets flying high above much of the nation and elsewhere in the world are part of a massive top secret military research and development project possibly linked to the United Nations, researchers have concluded." And he says, "A group of about a dozen researchers spent more than a year, mostly in secret, studying the chemtrails. They include experts in electronics, communications, environmental engineering, medicine, biomedical research, chemistry, governmental and political affairs, and military theory and technology, as well as veterans of the Central Intelligence Agency and the top secret National Security Agency." So that obviously tells you that whatever this covert operation is many of our own intelligence people are not informed about it. They're out of the loop. Now, at the very end, he says, "According to the NSA researcher, National Security Agency, individual members of the group have been threatened." Okay, so this is not only covert, but they want to keep it quiet, and they're willing to threaten people to keep it quiet. "Various document and other materials have been stolen from the homes of some of the researchers." And then this guy, the NSA researcher, and this is an intelligence guy, said he believes that this was done under the direction of a globalist entity, probably the United Nations, or a subgroup that remains in the shadows and beyond public exposure, at least for now. So this really gets interesting. I mean, these guys are above the level of, apparently, many of our own intelligence agencies. It's a global effort, maybe coming out of the United Nations. But, okay, so You know, all of that is interesting. Now let's talk a little bit about the individual components about this. Do we need to talk about harp? You think everybody understands that melody, or should I mention it?
You probably should get into that. And of course, I mean, I've talked to numerous people. Over the 5 years that we've been doing this radio program, who I know to go to and ask questions, and they'll come back to me and state that when they go to ask questions with people they know that should have a clue as what's going on that fly, and they would come back and wouldn't be able to answer. They were told not to say anything, or they didn't get any answers when they were asking the questions. So there's a lot of things that are not being spoken about here, and that's when you know that, you know, maybe you've hit upon a sore area to start digging around and checking out what's going on.
Again, could you speak up, Melody?
Okay, I mean, that's where you when you find that, you know, you're not getting answers or you're getting stonewalled, you usually know that you're in an area that there may be something behind it. Now, granted, it's getting to the point national security is getting to the is used for everything. You have to start wondering what's going on, and now we're finding out that it leads in many different directions. I've spent the whole last week going off and studying, watching videos, and reading, and finding out that this is a vast subject, correct?
Oh, yes. And yet the people of the world are just waking up to it. Now, let me just mention a couple of resources. Again, I mentioned Rosalie Bertell's excellent book, Planet Earth, The Latest Weapon of War. And she really does a nice job of giving you the history of these military projects. Then there's Nick Begich and Gene Manning. We had interviewed Nick Begich from Alaska. It's called Angels Don't Play This Harp. HAARP, Advances in Tesla Technology. There's also Jerry E. Smith's book, Harp, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. Now, Jerry died, I don't know under what conditions, but he's no longer with us, but we did interview him. There's an excellent book by the reporter and politician Bob Fitrakis called The Fitrakis File, Star Wars, Weather Mods, and Full Spectrum Dominance. There's another book by Jerry Smith, again deceased, called Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. There's also a whole series of DVDs out. There's one California Skywatch put out called Skylines, Rosalind Peterson's group. There's a group in New York, New York Skywatch, that's put out a video, even better one, I think, called Climate Engineers. There's that recent one by B. Edward Griffin called What in the World Are They Spraying? And in that video, which is quite up to date, last year or so, they actually bring you to a National Academy of Sciences conference, I think in San Diego, where some of the top climate engineers in this country, guys like Lowell Wood out of Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, and David Keith out of the University of Calgary, and Binford out of the University of California, Irvine, and Kenneth Caldera out of Stanford University. A lot of this comes from Stanford. A lot of things come from Stanford. But anyway, these guys were all there and talking about it, and then the movie takes you over to, I think, Belgium, where there's an international conference on what are they doing to the skies, and there you have civilians asking questions. So if people want to get up to speed, I would recommend getting that movie by, what is it, B. Edward Griffin?
G. Edward.
In the World Are They Spraying? We're waking up, but this is an extremely covert series of operations. And the American people have not been informed. They have not given their permission, nor have people in other parts of the world.
And there's a reason why we need to be asking questions, because when you start digging in this, and the people, believe me, that you are mentioning, Clifford Carnicom and others, Sophia Smallstorm, there's others out there that are starting to ask questions because they're starting to analyze some of the things that are coming out of these chemtrails, that, you know, because they have particulates that do land at the Earth. And so there's things that are leading to arenas that we would have never figured.
Well, let me give you a quote from this guy, Lowell Wood. Now, Lowell Wood, again, is out of Lawrence Livermore. He's a protege of Edward Teller, the father of the H-bomb, who is sometimes referred to as Dr. Strangelove, you know, and you remember that movie with Slim Pickens, Dr. Strangelove,
right.
The crazy guy going down with the bomb, you know, I mean, and it was Dr. Edward Teller who said we should drop some hydrogen bombs in the coast of Alaska and maybe the northeastern United States to create some new harbors for our ships. I mean, the guy was very carried away with his technological genius, you know, and didn't give much of a damn about the consequences. Lowell Wood is his protege, and he's been also involved in lots of Star Wars military weaponry. He's also been called or dubbed Dr. Evil. And the Rolling Stone magazine had an article, which is pretty interesting, called Can Dr. Evil Save the World? Again, with the premise, again, completely false premise, that he would be saving the world from man-caused global warming, i.e. you and me driving our cars. Again, the ignorance is, you know, astounding. That, you know, these reporters are reporters, and the politicians are politicians and lawyers. They don't know anything about climate change, but they, you know, or natural weather processes, but they just repeat the rhetoric over and over again that, you know, we're destroying the Earth's climate and we can fix it. This is preposterous because, as we've established very well with Dr. Tim Ball, who's Canada's first climatology PhD, we don't know everything there is to be known about climate, but the attitude amongst this new generation of computer modelers and climate engineers is that we're going to use the atmosphere as a physics laboratory. Okay, so this is the mentality. It's kind of a let's go for it and see what happens. In fact, here's a quote from Dr. Lowell Wood, a.k.a. Dr. Evil, at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Quote, we've engineered every other environment we live in. Why not the planet? Okay. So these are the guys that we pay, we taxpayers, we fund these megalomaniacal plague god type scientists. And then he also said, you don't have to argue with me and I don't have to argue with you. Let's find something more pleasant to talk about because I'm going to win. In other words, we're going to do it. Here's a quote from I wanted to find one from David Keith, this guy who's at the University of Calgary and who is invested in some of these geoengineering schemes. He's saying basically the cost now of changing the atmosphere composition is low enough so that a single individual, such as Bill Gates, who's rich, could now bring on an ice age. Now that would be serious because ice age, you know, I mean, climate does affect life, and in general, cold climate is much harder on humans and plants and animals than warm climate, which is much more benign and beneficent. But
isn't that something that that has also been argued that has been taking place, or was the a reason originally back in the 70s is why they started painting?
Well, you know, again, we have this kind of a sky is falling type press, you know, who latch on to tiny things. And what we saw is a slight cooling well, it's very hard to get an average temperature of the Earth, but what we saw was a trend towards slight cooling between about 1945 and 1970, which the press and Time magazine and whatnot latched onto and said, oh, we're, you know, and they drew these time series show with a downward trend saying that, oh, we're going to go into another ice age, you know, and then you would have Time magazine with a cover showing, you know, the glacier and stuff like that. You know, I mean, just very sensationalistic. Well, we started warming about 1975 until about 1998, very slightly again. And now, you know, then by 1998 or 2000, of course, time has flip-flopped, and the scientists like Steven Schneider of Stanford, et cetera, they're all now, you know, saying, oh, the Earth's heating up and we got to, you know, this is the, you know, this is our fault and we've got to do something about it. Well, you know, anybody who studies climate change, which would include Earth scientists principally, or who look at the long-term changes in the environment, and I'm a physical geographer, so that includes me, and I've studied the ice ages and I've studied climate change, locally and correlating with the global trends, et cetera. For long time periods, like 2 or 3 million years, anybody who studies climate change knows that natural climate changes are much, 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 much greater than anything that we've seen in the last century, so therefore much greater than anything that humans have been able to do. So, you know, any Earth scientist, I think, who's worth his salt, who's not, you know, brainwashed by the computer models, will just kind of shrug the whole thing off, you know. But of course, there's been a lot of money in science to be made, so a lot of scientists would then, you know, get on that bandwagon to get the grant money. But I digress. Let's go back a second. I'm hearing a beep. Is that my phone or yours?
I think it must be on your end because I don't hear it on my end.
Okay. Well, I hope it's not going to kick out, but let's try. Okay, HARP, again, is the facility up in Gakona, Alaska, a little bit north of Anchorage. HARP, again, is an acronym meaning High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. And, of course, auroral has to do with the aurora borealis, so the northern lights of all the ions in the atmosphere that cause the beautiful lights up there. Well, what's happened with this particular facility, as well as, again about 20 others, they set up an array of antennas, and then they beam billions of watts of energy into the upper atmosphere, to the ionosphere, which is the layer where you have electrified particles, ions, which cause radio waves to bounce back to the Earth, and of course that's how we can transmit radio around the world. This is nature's, this is natural to have an ionosphere comprised of tiny ions or electrified particles, which will tend to bounce the radio waves back to the Earth. So humans now have gotten into the process and beamed extraordinary amounts of radio waves or extremely low frequency waves, ELFs, up to the ionosphere. And what's more, they're actually now trying to, and the Air Force in particular has been creating artificial ionic mirrors, which would have a more stable, steady reflecting surface, because the ionosphere has its own weather. So you get these kind of densities of electrified particles always moving around. Well, the Air Force wants more reliable ionospheric mirrors, so that's one of the projects they're working on. But so the idea is to bounce these ELFs into the ionosphere, and then they can come down anywhere on the Earth. That energy then can be used in a number of ways. Actually, it can be used, if it's directed to the ionosphere, is to pick up the ionosphere, actually push it up. That's why they're called ionospheric heaters, to excite those electrified particles, push up the ionosphere, which causes kind of a vacuum in the lower layers, the troposphere and the stratosphere, etc. And then air from surrounding areas has to kind of come in and fill that and rise up. So in that sense, you know, they can steer the jet stream, they can create drought and floods by moving not only the jet stream but these atmospheric rivers, water vapor rivers, which girdle the Earth. So they can not only, you know, change the areas, make certain areas wet and make other areas dry, they can also use this technology to steer hurricanes. They can also use it to generate earthquakes, because we now know at least where most of the fault zones are that are active, and we can beam then enormous quantities of energy at a fault zone until, of course, it results in a breakage along the fault zone and a slippage and an earthquake. So,
you know, I have to wonder if the fracking has a dual purpose other than just bringing out the gas and oil out of the ground, but because they found that happening when they were pumping fluids into the ground in the Denver area, and it was creating tremors and the like, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can. We've known that there are essentially five ways that, you know, humans can induce earthquakes, and one is to, you know, put fluids into the ground and lubricate the fault zone until it, of course, slips and slides. And another way is to put weight on the ground, like when you fill up the Colorado River to form Lake Mead. Lots of small earthquakes occurred, et cetera. But the fracking, I think, would be. If it's producing earthquakes, it would be very small earthquakes, like, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 on the Richter scale. So certainly that's not the goal of the fracking. The goal of the fracking is to
bring out the resources,
get the gaseous natural gas, the hydrocarbons, to move through rocks such as sandstone and whatnot that may not be quite as porous as they want. So they want to make a bunch of, they want to force fluids and air into the rock to make the rock crack and break up into lots of cracks to get the natural gas moving upwards so that they can recover it. So, I mean, it may result, yes, in some earthquakes, some smaller earthquakes.
Okay, so then how does the HARP affect earthquakes then?
If you've got a fault zone, like, say, the San Andreas Fault, there's a lot of tension built up. I mean, you're on a plate boundary. Two plates have been sliding past each other at depth, but at the surface, because of the friction of the rocks at the surface, there's a lot of tension or strain built up at the surface. Now, if you direct energy to that area where there is, this is what you call a geomorphological instability, a threshold instability situation. And back in 1966, the scientist. One of the Jason Group scientists, a guy named Gordon MacDonald, wrote an article called "How to Wreck the Environment," and, you know, this was given to National Academy of Sciences and the government, saying, "Listen, if you want to use the environment as a weapon of war, what you got to do is you got to find areas where there's, you know, kind of a threshold situation. There's a natural instability where you add a little energy to that system, and then you get a big return." And so imagine you're along the San Andreas Fault at Los Angeles. You haven't had an earthquake there in some of those areas for 100 years, so there's a lot of strain built up. At depth, the plates have been sliding past each other inexorably at the rate of about 1 or 2 inches every year. And so you might have, you know, 5, 10, 15 feet of potential movement, but the surface friction is locking the rocks together. Okay, so you add ELFs, extremely low frequencies of energy, and you kind of heat that whole thing up until it goes. So you can just kind of pour on the energy until you get the response you want.
Okay. Well, let me go ahead and state this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my often co-host and guest this evening is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and I also want to mention that he has a website, www.naturalclimatechange.us, and Water Watch Alliance and 911 NWO, right?
No, yeah, 911NWO.com. Yeah, that's the website I did first, of course, after 911, trying to sort out that mystery, and I think I've pretty much sorted it out. And I think there is a tie-in with directed energy weapons. What we're talking about here is directed energy weapons. I think both the weather warfare and 911 involved these exotic military technologies.
Okay, and again, I want to also mention that we are doing a membership drive, so please go to the website at khen.org, and there's a PayPal button there where you can contribute that way or drop a check by or your contribution, and at the station, which is behind the Mountain Mail, or our address is Box 596, Salida, Colorado 81201, or call 539-1069 during the day, and they would be happy to take your contribution so that you can support community radio here in Salida. And Dr. Carlstrom, you were talking about the earthquakes and how they can be created by HAARP.
Yeah, and of course, you know, then we can speculate about some of the big earthquakes that we've had in the last decade or so. But let me go back to HAARP just a little bit. HAARP is part of the U.S. military's non-conventional war program that began in the 1990s after the Soviet Union collapsed. And so what we're talking about is electromagnetic warfare weapons, including scalar weapons, radio frequencies, and microwave weapons. This, again, it involves Tesla technologies. It's part of what the military calls the Revolution in Military Affairs, RMA. HAARP is also capable of generating electromagnetic pulses. It can create a plume of electrically charged particles that can be exploded when ignited by an electric pulse, an EMP. And this is may or may not, it probably is very similar to what Nikola Tesla called the infamous death ray. And another possible use, as we said, is to use HAARP to direct extremely low frequencies to fault zones and trigger earthquakes. This is shown in a History Channel program called Weather Warfare. And another potential use is mind control, because HAARP can broadcast electromagnetic energy in the range of human brain waves between 0 and 10 hertz. And again, as I said, author Jerry Smith believes that the main function of HAARP is, in fact, to bathe the atmosphere in extremely low frequencies that are the same frequency as that of the human mind, and therefore you know, control people's thoughts or plant thoughts. Or I mean, this is an area which we haven't delved into as much as I hope we can, but mind control seems to be one of the purposes of these programs.
And a lot of this research that we've been doing is starting to, and has been leading from my research into the mind control and genetics.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, both of us are on the same wavelength, and I think we have some interesting interviews coming up on mind control. Because, you know, if you are, you know, conducting a covert war against a domestic population, how do you do it? Well, mind control can involve just control of what information the population, you know, takes in, such as propaganda in the newspapers, which we have. But a mind control can also be much more active and involve trauma-based mind control. I think 911 and global warming are both have a trauma-based mind control. They're scaring people. Certainly 911, they showed the images of the towers going over and over again. And so when people are traumatized like that, they're very suggestible. And they, you know, they have psychologists at the Tavistock Institute in Britain that, you know, studied shell shock in World War I soldiers. And not to, you know, help the soldiers, but to figure out how to shatter other people's minds and control them through mind control. I mean, this is the psychological warfare branch of the British Army that did this, where it started. And then they brought in Sigmund Freud and Edward Bernays, his nephew, who wrote the book in 1928 called Propaganda. So they're using propaganda. They're using more active means, including, I think, now these wavelengths. And I think if we really look into this mind control thing, we will see that, you know, we have a very tiny ruling elite in the world. They want to control the masses. And it's a lot easier to control us if they can control what we think. And there's a number of technologies that they've developed to do this. But anyway, so yeah, the mind control thing is potentially a very big part of HAARP. Gets into Project Blue Beam and things like that, where, you know, there are various, you know, kind of CIA projects and plans. MK Ultra, Project Monarch, a whole series of CIA covert things that have to do with mind control. But that's for another interview, I hope. Anyway, all of these things are well documented, and yet people are mostly unaware of them. The amazing thing about America, we live in a open society where the information is there, government documents, Freedom of Information Act documents, and yet people are busy doing their lives, doing their jobs, watching football games, whatever. They're not digging. They're not taking advantage. Like Alan Dulles said when they did the Warren Commission report, which is a giant cover-up of the Kennedy assassination, Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, said, well, it's okay, you can put all the information in there, 2,000 pages or whatever. Americans don't read. Well, if Americans don't read, then I guess we deserve what we get, don't we? I mean, if we're going to sit here, and just watch football games and drink beer, then I guess we are sheeple. But if we would like to, if we'd like to own this country, like the Constitution says we do, then rights come with responsibilities, and the responsibility is to find out what's going on. So,
well, when you talk about mind control, and then you have the ones that do read, and then they get ridiculed and put down for questioning, they have to go through a whole nother process that many of us had to do to overcome that kind of obstacle.
Well, yeah, and after the Kennedy assassination, this word conspiracy theory became a pejorative. It became a put down. And of course, most crimes are conspiracies because it involves more than one person making a plan to do something illegal. That's what a conspiracy is. And but again, it's been used as a way to stop thought. Oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. So that's a criticism, so therefore, you better not do it. Well, of course, things are conspiracies. I mean, this is how the world works. And by the way, the motto of the Mossad, which is the intelligence agency for Israel, which does a lot of this stuff, like 911, for instance, says, by deception thou shalt do war. Okay, so it's a lot easier to pull off a control of a population by deception than it is by military conquest. So that's why so much effort has gone into mind control and is going into mind control and is being used in mind control, because this is a way, again, for a very tiny ruling elite to control a very, very large number of people. But anyway, so again, I wanted to underscore the point that people are not aware of this. They haven't been given the opportunity to give their informed consent or deny it. The official denials have been coming every time somebody like Clifford Carnicom out of Santa Fe, who really was onto this in the about a decade ago, and has a great website, Carnicom dot. It used to be Carnicom.com. Now it's CarnicomInstitute.com. And he just had a conference on this whole thing, but he's got it very well documented, all the letters that he's been writing to his congressmen and whatnot, and their responses, and which institutions have been checking out his website. Well, it's the U.S. Navy, it's the U.S. Air Force, it's the Boeing, it's the Martin Marietta, it's the military contractors, it's the drug contractors, it's all the people that are involved in doing the spraying that have been interested in his website, and he's been able to document, and there's a big, big, long list, of people that are hitting on his website.
And that's because he's been working around a lot of bioengineering that they're finding is being an offshoot out of some.
Well,
of the,
yeah, the, yeah, you know, the spraying, what he calls the energetics, the HARP, the Gwen, the electromagnetic frequencies being sprayed, that's one part of it. The spraying is the particulates, and he calls it then, but it also, the spraying involves biologicals, is what he calls biologicals, which are often something kind of, as Sophia calls it, pseudo-life, nanotechnology stuff that, the military, the Air Force, talks about having nanoparticles and nanoclouds, clouds made out of nanoparticles that they can guide and things like that. But there's other things. There's artificial blood cells that are in these things, and there's tiny little pseudo-life forms that seem to do strange things. And we're going to hopefully have somebody to talk about that. Sophia Smallstorm gave a great PowerPoint on this at a conference in Santa Clara. I think it's called conspiracycon.com last spring or summer. and it's on YouTube. It's really excellent. But
and we're
so there's many dimensions to this. I think this the short story is that it's it involves spraying of particulates. It involves spraying of biological particles, nanoparticles, and it involves putting out electromagnetic energy.
And, you know, there's another aspect that I'm seeing tied in, and this has been through an interview that I've done with Jennifer Lake, and that there may be some a tie-in with the nuclear industry that may have an offshoot effect there that I hadn't heard Minnie talking about, but she's got an interesting angle there as well. So, and when you were talking about the idea that the cooling took place between this time period was also seemed to be the big strongest time when they were doing the nuclear testing in this country, and often we heard the term nuclear winter, and it makes me wonder. I don't know. It just kind of crossed my mind.
I think that's a dead end. Don't worry about that. That's not germane. But getting back to the topic of geoengineering, officially denied for decades, and yet there's a long history. And I want to go through that history real quick here. But at first, I want to just say that as of 2010, the U.S. Congress and the U.K. House of Commons are proposing to collaborate and coordinate geoengineering activities. So these things which have been officially denied now, all of a sudden, there's legislation coming out to coordinate from the U.S. Congress and the House of Commons. So that's pretty interesting. Let's see here. I want to talk a little bit about the history. This is a vast subject. So, again, I would refer to ask people to, you know, if they have the time and the energy, go to my website, take a look at this PowerPoint. You can use it. You can download it. You can show it to people. Let's talk a little bit about what the basic geoengineering methods are. Number one, which is totally preposterous, it's to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. As we've mentioned with Dr. Ball, carbon dioxide is now about 380 parts per million. It's 4 in 10,000 molecules in the atmosphere. It has virtually no effect on temperature whatsoever. For much of Earth's history, it's been up around 1,000, 2,000, even 10,000. Parts per million, much higher, without any tipping points being reached. Carbon dioxide is part of photosynthesis. The more carbon dioxide, the better the plants do, etc. We wouldn't suffer from carbon dioxide unless it was much higher, maybe 1,500, 2,000 parts per million.
But Dr. Carlson, where the pertinence comes in is that it's going to be used to extract from us quite a bit of our earnings in with their value, with their carbon credits and carbon taxes.
Yeah, carbon taxes, carbon credits, the Kyoto Protocol, the Global Warming Solutions Act of California, etc. All of these are bogus science, but the attempt is a political attempt to deindustrialize the industrialized countries, because 85% of our energy comes from the burning of fossil fuels. And the burning of fossil fuels, of course, produces carbon dioxide. Now, so they have to stick to their guns and say, oh, carbon dioxide is causing warming. Well, that's disproven in many ways. But let's go back and just say, okay, this is their scenario. And now what do they propose to do about fixing this problem, which is really a non-problem? They've got some geoengineering solutions, which are, of course, expensive and ridiculous. One is to fertilize the ocean with iron filings to promote the growth of phytoplankton, which would absorb CO2. You know, all of these, of course, would have detrimental environmental effects and would not help any anything with the climate. One would be to install vast numbers of funnels in the ocean to draw nutrient-rich cold water to encourage algal blooms, again, that would suck the carbon dioxide from the air and move it to the deep ocean. Again, a technological fix, which would be a tremendous waste of money and damaging to the environment. One would be to build thousands of sodium trees. One would be to sequester carbon dioxide, which nobody really has figured out how you would do that. Liquefy the carbon dioxide and then pour it into vast caverns underground. Well, I mean, these things would cost an enormous amount. So all of these would have the effect then of just increasing the economic ruin of the United States. The EPA would say, oh, carbon dioxide's a pollutant, you're going to have to reduce it, so therefore the coal-fired power plant's going to have to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide that it puts out by 50%. They're going to have to take the profits from selling the electricity to do this carbon sequestration, which would take, you know, roughly a third of all the energy that the power plant produces. So it's another way to cripple the economy without any benefit. Now, the second basic geoengineering method is the one that we're really seeing, and that's the proposed sunblocking methods like solar radiation management. And what the scientists here are trying to do is mimic the effects of a volcanic eruption, which we know puts a lot of particulates into the atmosphere and blocks the sunlight and cools the climate a little bit. So the solar radiation management is designed to reflect incoming solar radiation, increase the planetary reflectivity or albedo. This would be done, and Edward Teller, again, wrote the paper on this in 1997. They actually did a cost-benefit analysis, and what they said was, okay, add small reflective particles of sulfur dioxide, aluminum oxide dust, etc., to the stratosphere 10 to 15 kilometers up, which would then increase the planetary albedo, which is reflectivity, reflecting the solar radiation back. You could use fleets of high-flying aircraft, naval guns, rockets, hot air balloons, or blimps, and the estimated cost for a 40-year project would be maybe $40 million to $100 billion per year. That's a wide range. A couple billion a year for the world. And, of course, our politicians are saying, well, that's a pretty good deal, because if we were to scale back our burning of fossil fuels with Plan A, the Kyoto Protocol, carbon taxes, et cetera, that would cost more. So they're saying Plan B is more cost effective. But again, you know, solutions to a non-problem. Parenthetically, the atmosphere now reflects about 23% of the insulation. And if you reflected an extra 2%, that supposedly would cool the planet, they say, enough to offset a doubling of CO2. But there's no proof that a doubling of CO2 would cause much of a temperature increase at all. The second plan is to seed the clouds and increase low-altitude stratocumulus cloud cover. Third one is to, there's about 1,500 specially designed unmanned ships would send up plumes of water vapor that would increase cloud cover. Another one is to add salt. In fact, Bill Gates has spent about $4 to $6 million of his money for a project in cloud whitening, which adds salt to the atmosphere and increases the cloud cover, again, to block solar radiation. Well, of course, if you block solar radiation, then plants have a harder time growing. Agricultural crops don't do as well. And if you're adding salt, that salt will precipitate out and go onto the soil. You've now made a salty soil, which, of course, if you look in the Middle East, if you've got too much salt in the soil, plants, most agricultural plants, can't grow. So all these things would have, you know, environmental consequences, which would be much, much worse than any positives that you might get. Another one is to convert dark-colored forests into light-colored grasslands. And another one is to mandate whitening of city rooftops and roads. All of these are solutions, again, to a non-problem. And they all involve great uncertainty and carry significant risks to the health of humans and the biosphere. And yet, that's what our scientists and our politicians are now talking about. Oh, we're going to have to look at geoengineering, again, to fix this non-problem of man-caused global warming.
So let me just say, this is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and again, he has been my co-host often, and this evening is my guest on Truth Quest, and we're talking about geoengineering, and go ahead.
Yeah, well, I found this quote by this climate engineer up in Calgary who's invested in some of these programs. He says, "The fact is that with the right technology, it may be cheap enough through engineering the stratosphere that literally individual human beings may have the wealth necessary to introduce an ice age." Can you imagine one mad billionaire could plunge the Earth into an ice age? Now, that would cause radical population reduction. I mean, 18,000 years ago, under natural climate conditions, Canada was covered with 1 to 2 miles of ice. Well, of course, those, you know, and that will happen again, but probably not for another 10 or 20,000 years or 30. But if humans would have the technological ability to speed up that natural process and move us into an ice age, this would be tremendously damaging.
Well, one of the other aspects, and this, Rosalind Peterson speaks of this in some of her videos, is the fact that this geoengineering is starting to affect the growth of our vegetation and having some aspects of our food and other life forms, right?
Yeah, I mean, this can all get very, very depressing. I mean, you know, Rosalind Peterson's recent YouTube that I just watched was called, you know, geoengineering, destroying the atmosphere. Well, the atmosphere, of course, is one of the many natural processes. There's the lithosphere, there's the biosphere, there's the hydrosphere, there's the pedosphere. All these, you know, cycles, all these natural systems are operating together and, you know, have done for millions and billions of years. And if we radically tinker with the atmosphere, we can radically certainly affect the biosphere and the hydrosphere and the pedosphere, which is the soil. So, yeah, playing God with the atmosphere, something that, you know, some scientists and politicians think is a good idea, I think it's a terrible idea, but that's that's my bias. Here's some recent headlines. 2009 Time magazine article, "Geoengineering may be the only way to prevent the climate from collapsing." Again, complete, utter nonsense, a lie, a huge, big lie. People need to learn to recognize this. Obama's science czar, Joan Holdren, in a 2010 interview, compared global warming, again, man-caused global warming, to being in a car with bad brakes driving toward a cliff in the fog. Okay, here's a guy who's a physicist, an environmentalist who wrote a book with the Ehrlichs who thought the population was going to crash, you know, in 1996 or something like that, or before 1990. And it's been proven, also from Stanford, by the way, also in the Club of Rome, Paul Ehrlich, like Steven Schneider. So many of these guys are from these think tanks that want to deindustrialize and depopulate the industrial world. I mean, they're so compromised, these scientists. And yet, of course, because they are part of the ruling elite's agenda, they're the ones that get on the TV specials. They're the ones who get their books out there. They're the ones who get famous. They're the ones who get the grants. You know, these guys ought to be put in jail. I seriously think they should for science fraud. But anyway, Holdren concluded, and this is our science czar, "Geoengineering or Plan B has got to be looked at. We don't have the option of taking any approach off the table." Again, he's a physicist. In his book, Ecosystems, in 1972, with Paul and Ann Ehrlich, he recommended that we needed a global government to reduce the population, that we need to you know, experiment with mass sterilization. It's the rhetoric, it's the ideology of these Malthusian eugenicists. Now we call it what, transhumanism now. It's their ideology that there's too many people and that we need to get rid of you know, half or more of the human population. You know, generally the ruling elite would say those people should be dark skinned, you know, because they're elite assholes, you know. Sorry. But anyway, you know, these are the people that are saying, you know, there's too many people, so other people should die so we can have the resources. And again, here I say in the PowerPoint, in his 1973 text, Ecosystems, co-authored with Pollan and Ehrlich, Holdren calls for compulsory population control measures, including forced abortion, mass sterilization, and implementation of a, quote, planetary regime, in other words, global government, to control the global economy, natural resources, and population. The first step necessarily involves partial surrender of sovereignty to an international organization. Quote, well, I mean, this is all stuff right out of the Club of Rome, which is this elitist think tank associated with the United Nations and the Tavistock Institute of Human Ecology, or excuse me, Human Relations. I'm still trying to get to the history here. Let's see if I can find it.
Well, you know, that one of the interesting things I've found talking, I mean, because you've done several hundred different interviews and among probably 150 different people, and I'm finding that it doesn't matter what subject you go into, they all kind of have a meet in the middle. It's something around this various issues that is probably a handful, and that's what's amazed me in the aspect.
All this is coming from the ruling elite, which is a very small group, but they're very well connected.
Right,
they're
right.
Very rich.
and that they have compartmentalized and split off and created many, many different organizations and agendas, but they all still, again, come back and meet in the middle at some point, and that's why it's been so interesting in doing this kind of research, because you do find that they all connect at some.
Yeah, well, here's a very telling quote. Once in a while, they tell you, you know, their front men, their representatives, tell you what they're up to. Former Secretary of Defense William Cohen in 1997. At a counterterrorism conference sponsored by former Senator Sam Nunn, said, quote, others are engaging, and he's talking about other nations, engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are working, finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts. Well, you know, I mean, he's just telling you the way it is, you know. But let me give you a little bit of the history of geoengineering, weather modification, and weather warfare here. Also in my PowerPoint on my website, naturalclimatechange.us. 1943 was World War II. The Brits used the first operational use of chaff, which is aluminum strips coated with fiberglass and cut to one quarter the length of a radar's wavelength. This disables the radar, so the Germans then were not able to use radar to detect incoming Royal Air Force planes, and England was able to bomb the hell out of Hamburg, Germany without any realistic defense. So that's weather warfare. That's geoengineering. In 1946, and it was Britain, 1946, GE's Vincent Schaefer dropped 6 pounds of dry ice into a cold cloud, causing, quote, explosive growth of the cloud. Okay, this is cloud seeding. 1949, the year I was born, Project Cirrus. Silver iodide is used to seed clouds in New Mexico. It rained about 320 billion gallons over half of New Mexico. In other words, it worked. 1950, that's what, 61 years ago, the Weather Modification Association was formed. So, been around for a while. 1952, this is the one I was telling you about, the UK's Operation Cumulus. The Royal Air Force covertly seeded clouds over Devon, England, and flooding caused 35 deaths and destroyed bridges in the landscape. 1962 to 1983, Project Storm Fury. U.S. scientists weakened hurricanes, reducing winds by 30% by cloud seeding from aircraft. 1966 to 72, Operation Popeye. A U.S. military seeded clouds over the Ho Chi Minh Trail to wash out the North Vietnamese supply routes. And this was really the first successful use of weather warfare. It really kind of worked. And now we get into an interesting thing, because about this time the U.S. starts doing joint projects with the Soviet Union, which is supposed to be our enemy. Project POLEX, Polar Experiment of the Global Atmospheric Research Program, was an attempt to melt the polar ice cap. Project AIDJEX, Arctic Ice Dynamics Joint Experiment, also with the Soviets. Project Nile Blue was again joint project with the Soviets to change Arctic pack ice. Project Climate Dynamics, again, to change Arctic pack ice. In the 1970s, as I mentioned, the Soviets set up a woodpecker system, so-called because it gave a signal which sounded like a woodpecker on shortwave radios. Ham radio operators were picking this thing up, and it was wrecking their radio reception, like a woodpecker. The Soviets' woodpecker system sent out ELF, or extremely low frequency waves, at about 10 hertz. Again, that's the same as our mind brain waves, using Tesla transmitters, which produced a scalar grid over the U.S. so they could zap certain blocks with more energy and move the jet stream, create long-term weather blocks, create droughts like they did in California in the 80s. 1986, Soviet Air Force diverted Chernobyl fallout from reaching Moscow by seeding clouds. Belarus was hit instead. So, you know, these climate engineers are, you know, looking out for their own. There's something like 30,000 climate engineers in China now. In 2008, the Chinese government used 1,104 cloud-seeding missiles to remove the threat of rain ahead of the Olympic opening ceremony in Beijing. Moving along, 1992, we can start to see the policy paper trail. The National Academy of Science has put out a huge book, 918 pages, Policy Implications of Greenhouse Warming. Okay, so by 1992, the whole, I'm afraid, big lie of global warming was well established in the National Academy of Sciences. And so they put out this book, Policy Implications of Greenhouse Warming, Mitigation, Adaptation, and the Science Base. Well, when they talk about mitigation, they're talking about how you're going to fix it. So even in that 1992 volume, there were chapters on, guess what, geoengineering. 1996, using the weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025, written for and by the U.S. Air Force. Okay, 1996, there's a document you can download off the computer in which the Air Force tells you what and how they're going to control weather in weather warfare around the world and own it by 2025. 1997, Teller and Wood, again, Dr. Strangelove and Dr. Evil out of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, put out a paper. Actually, it was a pretty good paper. I read it. Global Warming and the Ice Ages, Prospects for Physics-Based Modulation of Global Climate. And at least he's honest enough to say that, you know, global cooling is much more dangerous. And he's saying by doing all this stratospheric spraying with particulates, they can not only warm the climate, they can cool the climate, and they can do both. Anyway, he's the one who did a cost-benefit analysis, said you could do this for, you know, $1 or $2 billion a year around the whole world, which they've been doing with Operation Cloverleaf. 1997, Vision for 2020, United States Space Command wrote that, which involves this exotic warfare type stuff, including electromagnetic radiation, etc., electromagnetic weapons, exotic weapons. 1998, Geoengineering, a Climate Change Manhattan Project, coming out of Stanford University, which again, now what he's saying here is, Manhattan Project, of course, was the crash program in World War II in which the U.S. built nuclear weapons. And the idea behind the Manhattan Project is, okay, let's throw money at it, get our best scientists for an emergency, and we'll make rapid progress. So they're saying, you know, climate change is such a threat, we better take our best scientists and do this. Well, apparently, again, they've done that covertly. People don't know about it mostly. 2001, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, again, comes out of the United Nations and Marie Strong, put out their third assessment report which they had the infamous hockey stick we talked about with Dr. Ball, which is bogus. But anyway, it calls for using geoengineering to, quote, mitigate global warming. So they've, again, created the perception of a problem, global warming, man-caused global warming, and they've offered the solution. Well, this is the Hegelian dialectic, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, problem, reaction, solution. This is the standard stuff that these world controllers use to fool us. 2000, Joint Vision 2020, America's Military Preparing for Tomorrow, Directorate for Strategic Plans and Policy, calls for, quote, full spectrum dominance of space by the U.S. military. By the way, since we're on 2000 here, I rewatched a video by Joan Vion about world government. In the year 2000, the UN met and did a policy paper claiming trusteeship of the global commons. The United Nations is now going to control the global commons, being space, the atmosphere, and the oceans. They're saying anything that's, in the ocean that's off of the 100-mile boundary is theirs. They're just going to claim it. And of course, if they've done that in 2000, well, they perhaps can convince themselves that legally now they can do all this geoengineering because they own the atmosphere. Well, maybe
there's even discussions about who owns the clouds, right?
What's that?
There's even discussions about who owns the clouds.
And who owns the rain, yeah.
Right, so...
And, of course, the UN has already weighed in on that now, unbeknownst to most people, and said they own it. That's Marie Strong with a grade 9 education as, one of the main movers and shakers. Again, just an operative for the global ruling elite. 2000, aviation and the environment. Aviation's effects on the global atmosphere are potentially significant and expected to grow by the General Accounting Office. Yeah, okay. All these planes are putting out jet fuel and they're putting out water vapor. And, of course, they're also putting out all the aerosols that are part of the chemtrails. Much more important. 2008, this is an interesting one, coming out of a workshop at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is probably the most important think tank in the United States and most influential. It's been devoted to, moving the United States beyond national sovereignty to world government ever since it was set up in 1921 as a kind of an American branch of the Royal Institute for International Affairs out of Britain. Which is also part of the roundtable groups and the ruling elite of the world, etc. But anyway, this one's called, get the title, Unilateral Geoengineering. In other words, we're just going to do it without asking anybody. Non-technical briefing notes. And then 2010, Geoengineering Governance and Technology Policy comes out of the CRS report for Congress. 2010, Climate Change, Preliminary Observations on Geoengineering, Science, Federal Effects, and Governance Issues by the General Accounting Office. 2010, a congressman by the name of Gordon chaired for the U.S. House of Representatives, chaired a document, put out a document called Engineering the Climate, Research Needs and Strategies for International Coordination Committee on Science and Technology. Okay, so now we're starting to get some official acknowledgement this stuff is happening. 2010, the UK House of Commons puts out their fifth report called The Regulation of Geoengineering, UK Royal Society Solar Radiation Management Initiative. Okay, again, we're talking about the Anglo-American Alliance here. We're talking about Britain and the United States, which pretty much rule the world. They want to be the ones to control this thing. And they're collaborating on it. Another document, 2010, Collaboration and Coordination on Geoengineering, U.S. House of Representatives, Committee on Science and Technology, and United Kingdom House of Commons, Select Committee on Science and Technology. Okay, so that's the paper trail. Now let me talk a little bit about some of the patents here. I'm sorry if I'm talking fast, but I just want to get this out there. I want people to be able to use this as a resource. Okay, these are just some of the many, many patents that have, been used that pertain to this. 1967, a patent entitled System and Method for Irradiation of Planet Surface Areas for Weather Control, Illumination, Heating, etc. from Orbiting Planar Satellite Reflecting Sunlight. 1975, the U.S. Navy contrail generator patent. U.S. Navy's been involved in a lot of this with the Air Force. It's called, quote, powder contrail having maximum radiation scattering ability for a given weight of material. This is the stuff they put out in the chemtrails that makes the artificial clouds. This is coming out in 1975, this patent. The seeding material consists of 85% metallic particles and 15% colloidal silica gel in order to produce a stable contrail that has a residence period of 1 up to 2 weeks, it says. Okay, 1987 is the important Bernard Eastland and Harp patent, which involves directed energy weapons of more than 1 billion watts, which can be used to, quote, alter the upper atmosphere wind patterns using plumes of atmospheric particles as a lens or focusing device to disturb weather thousands of miles away. Of course, the military got right on that, as well as Raytheon Corporation, which is part of the CIA, and, you know, ARCO was big on it. That's British. 1991, Hughes Aircraft, Welsbach seeding patent, quote, contains 18 claims to reduce global warming through stratospheric seeding with aluminum oxide, thorium oxide, and refractory Welsbach material, unquote, calls for using aluminum articles, particles of 10 to 100 micron size. 1994, method for precipitating atmospheric water by means of multi-component aerosols, tiny particles, including silver iodide, alkali metals, lead, copper, barium, ammonia, barium chromate, etc. 2009, modification, quote, modification of cirrus clouds. Those are the high, wispy clouds in the upper troposphere. And that's what we're now creating. We're creating artificial cirrus clouds. Modification of cirrus clouds to reduce global warming, unquote, proposed two methods of delivery for this same proportion of metallics to silica, 85% metallics, 15% silica, and the same staying power of 1 to 2 weeks. Well, there have been many attempts to ban weather warfare. The Space Preservation Act, I think, of 2001, the 107th Congress, would have banned the U.S. from using these things. Dennis Kucinich sponsored the bill. It was not passed. But listen to the things he was trying to ban. He was trying to ban chemtrails, written as chemtrails, trying to ban plasma, electromagnetic radiation, extremely low frequency, ELF, or ultra-low frequency, ULF, energy radiation, electromagnetic, sonic, laser weapon systems, psychotronic or other energies, that would be the mind control, strategic, theater, tactical, or extraterrestrial weapons, these are weapons from space, exotic weapon systems, including weapons designed to damage space or natural ecosystems, such as the ionosphere and the upper atmosphere, or climate, weather, and tectonic systems, the earthquakes, with a purpose of inducing damage or destruction upon a target population or region on the Earth or in space. In other words, environmental warfare. He's trying to ban space-based weapons, including missiles, energy weapons, subatomic particle beams. He's trying to ban information war, mood management, that goes back to the electromagnetic ELFs, and mind control, ELFs, chemical or biological agents, which Carnicom has been talking about and finding, electronic, psychotronic, or information weapons. Okay, all of these things now are being used because this law did not pass. Now, there have not
been... So, in
been,
a sense, though, it put it on the record that there was such a thing going on, right?
Well, it kind of does put it on the record, yeah. Now, there have been some treaties. The 1977 UN Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques, called the ENMOD Treaty, forbids the nations that sign it, the signatory nations, from military or other hostile use of weather modification that could result in widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects. Did the United States abide or Russia? Of course not. I mean, you got these UN treaties and nobody pays attention. In 2010, the UN Convention on Biodiversity also tried to impose a moratorium on geoengineering projects, such as vast cloud seeding schemes to fight climate change, artificial volcanoes, ocean fertilization, spraying seawater into the atmosphere to whiten the clouds, like Bill Gates is doing, place trillions of solar reflectors in space. 195 nations agreed. The U.S. did not agree. Anyway, so there have been attempts to regulate this stuff, but right now it's not regulated. So any business or government or military agency can go ahead and do whatever the heck it wants. And not only do they not have to suffer through any congressional oversight or laws, they don't have to tell the people. So it's just a free-for-all in space right now. It's kind of a laissez-faire. Let them do what they want. Now, sorry, Melody, I've been talking fast, trying to get this stuff across. Do you have any questions that come up here before I press on?
No, go ahead and press on, because I throw them
in
when
well,
I'm ready.
This document, 2025, the Air Force document, the weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025, maps it out. It says they want to have technology advancements in five major areas in order for them to have an integrated weather modification capability for the whole world. So they wanted to, and I'm sure they've done it and doing it, because, you know, we put out over half of our federal budget to military. The military-industrial complex is, you know, the sector of our economy, which is really booming and has since World War II. But, yeah, advanced nonlinear modeling techniques. Okay, computers. So I'm sure that they've done a lot with that. In fact, so do the global warming people. All of the global warming hype is coming from computer modelers. So I'm imagining that a lot of the funding that's gone into man-caused global warming, which has funded computer modeling and huge arrays of huge computers like the Cray computers at the, you know, in Boulder at the NCAR Center, National Center for Atmospheric Research. I'm sure a lot of this is you know, dual use for military. Computational capacity is the second thing they're saying we need to increase. Well, that also computer modeling. Information gathering and transmission, same. Then they're also talking about establishing a global sensor array. This would be the HARP type stuff. And number five, weather intervention techniques. In the document 2025, owning the weather by 2025, they talk about a matrix of capabilities, one, precipitation enhancement or avoidance, in other words, make floods or droughts, to degrade or improve lines of communication, visibility, morale of the enemy, storm enhancement and modification to deny operations or modify battle space environment, precipitation denial, again, inducing drought by denying fresh water, create or remove fog to increase or reduce concealment. Of course, that would give a big advantage in a battlefield to have fog either created or removed, depending on what side you're on. And then, quote, change the space weather, the ionosphere, to disrupt or improve communications, radar, or destroy space assets. So, again, these things are all out there in the documents. There have been a lot more geoengineering research papers coming out in professional journals. They're talking about doing this. Let me just say a brief history of Tesla technology now, which relates to the HARP. In 1886, Tesla invented alternating current. 1900, he applied for a patent to transmit electrical energy throughout the natural mediums. He wanted free energy for everybody on Earth. And he tried to produce it, but then J.P. Morgan pulled the plug on, so to speak, on that project, or on the funding of that project. In 1924, he confirmed that radio waves bounce off the ionosphere. 1940, Tesla announced his invention of the death ray, which we may have seen in use in various things like 911, the Twin Towers coming down, if you believe Dr. Judy Wood's hypothesis. I think that may overlap. All you need to do is interfere different wavelengths of energy, and if you get the right wavelengths to interfere, you create a new physics and you could cause molecular dissociation. 1958, the Van Allen belt radiation was discovered about 2,000 miles up. And the same year, Project Argus, the U.S. Navy exploded 3 nuclear bombs in the Van Allen belt. Didn't take them long. 1958, White House advisor on weather modification said the Defense Department is studying ways to manipulate charges, quote, of the earth and sky, and so to affect the weather. Okay, White House, Defense Department, 1958. This is not new, folks. 1960, series of weather disasters started to happen. So they started doing it. 1961, the military put up something like 350 billion tiny copper needles into the ionosphere to try to block communications so the enemy wouldn't be able to bounce radar off the ionosphere. This would be a telecommunications shield, as they called it. It wasn't particularly successful, so they don't talk about it much. 1961, scientists proposed artificial ion cloud experiments. In 1960s, they started dumping barium powder from satellites and rockets. 1961 and 62, the U.S. and Soviets blasted mini electromagnetic pulses, or EMPs, into the atmosphere. 300 megatons of nuclear devices depleted the ozone layer at that time by about 4%. 1962, the launch of Canadian satellites and start of stimulating plasma resonances by antennas within the space plasma. 1966, as I mentioned, Gordon J.F. MacDonald published military ideas on environmental engineering, quote, how to wreck the environment. National Academy of Sciences. 1960s in Wisconsin, the U.S. Navy Project Sanguine started to lay extremely low frequency, or ELF, antennae. 1968, Moscow scientists told the West that the Soviets discovered which magnetic field frequencies help human mental and physiological functions and which electromagnetic field frequencies harm human mental and psychological functions.
And that can tie into mind control and the like.
Absolutely, mind control. As well, not only mind control, but body control, too.
Right.
Physical processes. 1972, first reports on ionospheric heater experiments, that's like HARP, with high-frequency radio waves at Arecibo, Puerto Rico. 100-megawatt heater in Norway was built later in the decade. And these, again, changed the conductivity of the auroral Borealis and Australis in the ionosphere. 1973, there was a recommendation for the study of Project Sanguine's biological effects. Was denied by the Navy. In other words, Project Sanguine said, we can change people's minds and body functions. Somebody else said, maybe we better test that out and see what the effects are first. Navy said, nope. Are going to do it. 1974, the United Nations General Assembly banned environmental warfare. Didn't stop anything. 1974, high-frequency experiments at Plattsville, Colorado, Arecibo, Puerto Rico, and Armidale, New South Wales were effective in heating the bottom side of the ionosphere about 50 miles up. Also that year, experiments airglow brightened by hitting oxygen atoms in the ionosphere with accelerated electrons, creating an artificial aurora. 1975, Stanford professor Robert Helliwell reported that VLFs, or very low frequency electromagnetic radiation, from power lines is altering the ionosphere. U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson forced the Navy to release research showing that ELF transmission can alter human blood chemistry. We're still on Tesla technology here. 1975, the Pell Senate subcommittee urged that weather and climate modification work be overseen by a civilian agency answerable to the U.S. Congress. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. 1975, Soviets began pulsing their woodpecker ELF waves at key brainwave rhythms. Eugene, Oregon was one area that was particularly affected. 1976, Dr. Susan Bewin and Dr. Ross Ady showed that nerve cells were affected by ELF, or extremely low frequency fields. 1979, there was a launch of NASA's third high-energy astrophysical observatory, causing large-scale, artificially induced depletion in the ionosphere. The plasma hole was formed, caused by, quote, rapid chemical processes, unquote, between rocket exhaust and the ozone layer, and the ionosphere was significantly depleted over a horizontal distance of 300 kilometers for some hours. In 1985, Bernard Eastland applied for a patent, quote, method and apparatus for altering a region in the Earth's atmosphere, ionosphere, and or magnetosphere. And of course, that's what the HARP uses. It's the first of three Eastland patents assigned to ARCO Power Technologies, which sold off to Raytheon, and I think now somebody else, the Navy and the Air Force mostly. 1986, the U.S. Navy Project Henhouse duplicated Delgado's Madrid experiment, very low level, very low frequency pulsed magnetic fields harmed chick embryos, and if you believe them, well, I won't go into that. 1980s, the U.S. began working on the Ground Wave Emergency Network, GWEN Towers, each to generate very low frequency VLF waves for defense purposes. Still on Tesla technology, 1987 and to 1992, other APTI scientists at HARP build on Eastland's patents for development of new weapons capabilities. 1994, military contractor E-Systems, that's it, buys APTI, holder of Eastland patents, and contract to build biggest ionospheric heater in the world, HARP. 1994, Congress freezes funding on HARP until planners increase emphasis on earth-penetrating tomography, EPTM uses, sorry for all these acronyms, and that, of course, helps them identify things underground like gas and oil and nuclear bunkers and things for nuclear counterproliferation efforts. 1995, Raytheon Corporation buys E-Systems and old APTI patents. The technology is now hidden among thousands of patents within one of the largest defense contractor portfolios of Raytheon, which is, defense contractor. 1995, Congress budgets $10 million for 1996, quote, under nuclear counterproliferation efforts for HARP project. 1994 to 1996, testing of first HARP high active frequency rural research project equipment continues, even though funding is frozen. 1996, HARP planners tested the earth-penetrating tomography, the EPT applications, by modulating the electrojet at extremely low frequencies. 1998, the projected date for fully operational HARP system.
These are the ones that we know about.
Yeah, and there's, of course, much more. But this gives you an idea that this stuff is not new, even though science czar John Holdren is saying, well, we better look at geoengineering. Look at geoengineering. They've been doing it for 70 years. And what they can do is so far beyond probably what I've said that, the government is being highly disingenuous here. Now, I just wanted to mention, I know we don't have too much more time here, but I just went through Joplin, Missouri, and saw the wreckage from the tornado that hit there last spring. It was the most amazing and most destructive tornado in U.S. history. It came and started in South Joplin with a mile swath wide, destroyed about three or four blocks wide, and stayed on the ground, unlike most tornadoes, for 14 miles all the way through Joplin and in the next town, taking out over 7,000 homes. And, of course, then FEMA came in and put in all these emergency trailers and whatnot. And there just happened to be, I gather from reading, there just happened to be a secret morgue that was established to which they could bring dead bodies. I think about 158 or 178 or something like that people were killed. The people of Missouri, of course, good Christian folks, they you know, rallied very quickly. A lot of volunteers are still helping to rebuild. So Missouri, you know, I mean, it's a tremendous disaster, and they're recovering. But my point is that if you look at this stuff, if you read Michael Crichton's great book, State of Fear, 2003, in which he points out not only that the global warming scam is a hoax, but that the real story is weather warfare and geoengineering, this could be engineered. It might not be natural. And, of course, the genius of weather warfare, environmental warfare, is that the military can say, well, it's natural. So the steering, perhaps, of Hurricane Katrina, the steering, perhaps, of Hurricane Erin to within 90 miles of the coast of Manhattan on the day of September 11, 2001, the huge earthquakes, Christmas earthquake 2005 in Indonesia, that, you know, killed so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. The huge earthquake in Chile, off the chart, 9-point earthquake. The huge off the chart 9-point earthquake in Japan, all occurring in the last few years. The Haiti earthquake occurring right smack dab at the capital of 7.1. All of these could be man-made. So what we need to do now is we need to figure out the difference between a natural occurring event and a man-made event, because now we have the technology to make these events happen. Now we need to figure out who the ruling elite is and what their goals are, who they're trying to punish for what resources they're trying to commandeer. But I can say that I think that, you know, the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, for instance, this propaganda mill out of Britain, has declared war on the civilian population through mind control and things like that, propaganda, 60 years ago. And it could be that the military is also commandeered by the same ruling elite and has also, to some extent, declared war on the civilian population of the world. And so if we don't wake up and figure out what's what, then I guess we get, we get what we get. We get what they dish out. If, on the other hand, maybe some people go over to Joplin and say, and I'm afraid I wasn't quite forward enough to, there was a nice guy there who just lost his house. He gave me the story, and you know, they're rebuilding it. The insurance is going to take care of it. And, you know, sweet people, you know, his mom's house was taken out, but they're all alive because they went into the shelter, like, you know, kind of like Kansas. They have these underground bunkers.
So in other words, that we're just saying that you know, we need to be asking questions and we need to be doing some research and reading on this, because it isn't going to be necessarily fed to us via the mainstream media.
It's not
going
to be fed to us by the media. Unfortunately, it would seem that the experts, the real experts, the people who really know how to do this stuff, are, you know, making money working for these, you know, often covert governmental or supra-governmental programs, and, as you know, often in very compartmentalized capacities, so that they do one little thing and they don't know how the whole thing fits together. So we, the populace, we, the people, need to, I just retired from my job as a professor, you know, so people like me with some training in these areas need to come forth and do some work. It's volunteer work. I mean, I'm not getting any money for what I'm doing, but
there's a lot at stake, and if we don't, you know, this thing has got such a sociopathic air to it that if we don't, look how many countries that we are in and how many people have died in the warfare, and when you get these kind of money and funds behind it, it becomes a steamroller that just kind of is moving across the world with whatever reason that fits. And so if we don't stand up, and they're going to take all our money, all our property, and our lives if we don't, right?
Yeah, and of course this gets into the idea that Naomi Klein wrote about in her book, The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. She talked about 9-1-1, New Orleans, and the, you know, Indonesia Banda Aceh Christmas tsunami of 2005. as all being wonderful opportunities for the super capitalists, the corporations, to go in and rebuild areas that were destroyed. Now, she says this doctrine of, you know, disaster capitalism, the shock doctrine, has actually been taught for a long time at venerable places like the University of Chicago, with Milton Friedman, the economist, teaching generations of economists that this is how you do it. You wait for or create a disaster in which people are disoriented and confused, and there's, you know, an emergency crisis atmosphere. And then you go in there with your plan to redesign the economy or the beachfront or whatever you have to redesign so that you get to make more money. And she mentions in the book that the disciples of Milton Friedman just happened to be well-placed in the government in Chile when the September 11th coup occurred, 1973, orchestrated by Kissinger and Nixon, which toppled the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende. Okay. And installed the fascist dictator military guy Augusto Pinochet. And then at that point, Pinochet cracked down on the leftists, and over 30,000 people were killed and cemented into walls and all kinds of terrible stuff. But the disciples of Milton Friedman were right there to redesign the economy along, you know, kind of fascist capitalistic design.
Okay, let me go ahead and say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and I've got Dr. Eric Carlstrom with me, and we're finishing up on our discussion of geoengineering and maybe getting into some closing thoughts here. Is that what you're...
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm sorry I talked so fast and threw out so much. But again, I think these archives that you've got and I've got on our websites can be very valuable. I'm acting on faith that other people out there, you know, are caring enough so that they're willing to do some research, as you and I have been doing. The concluding thoughts are that, the warfare techniques used in the 21st century may mostly involve these exotic weapons and weather warfare, environmental warfare. It's cheaper for militaries than, you know, training a bunch of troops and having a bunch of high-tech equipment. Now the U.S. military is not going to,
they're not going to pass
that
by either.
Battleships, but this becomes a viable option for covert warfare. Again, it's very difficult to discern a natural disaster sometimes from these man-caused. So we are now playing God. If you think that the government can and should continue to do this and that they're doing it for your good, then, you know, don't worry about it. But if you think maybe that there are, you know, significant environmental consequences which are harmful, and that the consequences might not be acceptable for us or for people around the world, then I think we have to get involved and get informed and
look up,
demand
pay attention
of our representatives and congressmen and our political leaders now that they're discussing it in Congress openly for the first time. We need to, maybe flood Congress with people saying, for instance, maybe even just start locally and go to the local Board of Supervisors, the county, and say, we would like Swatch County to be a chemtrail-free zone, or we'd like Salida City to be a chemtrail-free zone, and pass an ordinance, and then just see where it goes. You know, in other words, push back.
Okay, and I want to thank you again, Eric, and your website's ericcarlstrom.com, 911nwo.com, 911 New World Order Files.
No, that your first two were right. The third one you just said not correct. The pertinent one here.
That's what brings it up. That's what I typed in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, the pertinent one here is naturalclimatechange.us.
Okay, and got five different websites. So
four different websites. Yeah,
four. Okay,
and I'm at the point now where I can start to connect 911 and geoengineering with exotic warfare and covert military activities, directed energy weapons, things like that.
Okay. And we're going to explore this subject a little bit more even next week with Scott Stevens, who is a weatherman, has been a weatherman, and has been taking on some of the aspects around the geoengineering and weather. And again, I want to thank you, Dr. Carlstrom, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thanks very much, Melody.
Okay.
Good night. We'll see you.